a global headache.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A sluggish trading start. The World Bank says the sluggishness is worse than they thought. But first, where's Wall Street? S&P 500 right now down 1.5%, 13 points. NASDAQ same, about 1.5% down. The Dow down about 1%, 95 points at 84.44. That's after a loss last week of about 3% for the Dow. In Asia, markets closed mostly up under 1%, but European shares are lower overall right now. Today, drugstore Walgreens said profits fell 9% in the third quarter. Shares of its stock are trading lower right now as well, about 4%. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us live this morning from New York. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Steve. I like how you're playing stormy weather in the background.
Yeah, there we go. Wall Street has the Monday blues, and we have a full week of economic data ahead. What are investors going to be looking for this week, Sam?
Well, I think they are looking for storm clouds. They're going to be focusing on certainly the Fed meeting, but also they're looking at economic data such as existing home sales and new home sales. They might be surprised that they're going to see an uptick. The GDP final number will come out. We'll probably see a 5.5% decline, which is a little better than the 5.7% that we last saw. Also, personal income could see an improvement. Only durable goods orders are likely to slip this week.
All right, Sam, hang on just a second because we have a new warning today from the World Bank. Private money isn't flowing as freely into emerging economies, and that could spell trouble for the rest of us because global growth will be tough if some countries are left behind. Let's hear from Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
The World Bank says the global economy will shrink at a rate of 3% this year. That compares with a March forecast of just 1.7%. World Bank senior economist Mark Riordan says high unemployment and steep deficits in emerging markets are slowing the recovery.
We're going to have these problems with us for several years to come, even once we get out of the trough of this recession.
That matters to developed economies, says Auerbach Grayson chairman Jonathan Auerbach, because emerging markets, in the Baltics, for instance, are very connected to richer nations.
They're very small economies, but they are heavily indebted. They're running huge deficits.
So instability could ripple far beyond their borders. But Auerbach says before you get too depressed about the World Bank report, keep in mind that many emerging markets are still growing, just not as fast as they used to be. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
All right, Sam Stovall back with us. If we've been so ingrained with this, recovery's coming, you know, kind of like the Redcoats. I mean, how do we look at these numbers and not think the message is wrong?
Well, I think the last statement was a very good one, that even though the worldwide economy is expected to fall 2.6% in 2009, we're still expected to see positive growth of about 5% for India and 6% plus for China. That is expected to be even stronger when we emerge from recession in 2010. So while those numbers are half what they were in 2007, they're still dramatically stronger than the rest of the world.
All right. Sam Stovall joining us this morning from S&P Equity Research in New York. Sam, thanks.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Apple says it sold more than 1 million iPhone 3GSs in the first 3 days. That makes it the most successful model yet. Reports over the weekend said Apple CEO Steve Jobs, who's been on medical leave much of the year, underwent a liver transplant a couple of months ago and will be back in a few weeks. And today, GM introduces its new Buick, and the Wall Street Journal reports that it will be marketing the Buick and other cars with a steady advertising budget, even though bankruptcy is a foregone conclusion for GM. That's $40 to $50 million a month. Listening to The Morning Report from Monday, June 22, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Sparks are flying again in the mining industry. There's talk today about another big and controversial merger. The UK-listed Xstrata says it wants to join with the South African giant Anglo American. But Anglo doesn't seem too keen on the idea. From London, here's Stephen Beard.
The merger would create a company worth around $68 billion. Analysts say the deal could save hundreds of millions a year in lower costs and taxes. But Anglo American has resisted Xstrata's advances before and is thought likely to do so again. The South African company believes it's in better financial shape than its suitor, and it fears it might become the junior partner in any alliance. Chris Hughes is with the financial website Breaking Views. He says this deal's also likely to face stiff political opposition.
Anglo-American is clearly the corporate crown jewel in South Africa. And, you know, this deal would be very difficult for South Africa to just wave through.
The steel industry is also likely to feel uneasy about the proposed deal. It would create the world's second biggest producer of coal used in steelmaking. That would give the coal producers more bargaining power. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Retail stocks ended on a high note on Friday. But when can we expect that sunny sentiment to show up at the cash register? Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
If only penny-pinching consumers had a little extra spending money, retail consultant Wendy Liebman says it wouldn't take much for it to start burning a hole in their pocket.
You know, they've just been so locked in, they feel like they've been hermits.
Liebman heads WSL Strategic Retail. Her research is detecting an ever-so-slight shift in consumer spending.
They're not cutting back as much as they were, and that's partly because they've cut back so much over the last 18 months. It's really just that the cutting back has been cut back, if you know what I mean.
That's a hopeful sign, but there's also a discouraging sign hanging over our heads that reads, buyers beware.
One in three tell us that they are very concerned about themselves or somebody in their family losing a job in the near future. So there is that real, it's not even underlying concern, it's really a fundamental concern.
And the rise in gas prices is diverting what might otherwise be extra spending money. So in spite of subtle shifts in some consumer confidence surveys, Liebman says it could take some time for that wishful thinking to really register. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
The city of Bozeman, Montana, is asking job applicants for their usernames and passwords on MySpace, YouTube, Facebook, and other online sites. City officials say compliance is not mandatory, and applicants who don't share their online personal information aren't penalized. But still, the move has provoked a backlash from privacy advocates. Though, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports, workers shouldn't be surprised.
Do you really want a prospective employer to know that
I've been having some medical problems?
That's from a YouTube video by a resident of Bozeman, Montana, who also shares,
I sleep naked, and I'm naked a lot.
Giving an employer the password to your social networking accounts may seem crazy, but employers may be able to delve into your online life without your help.
Job candidates should expect that recruiters and hiring managers are looking at their social networking profile, often before they even contact them for an interview.
That's Jeremiah Ao Yang, a social computing analyst with Forrester Research.
Even if you remove content later, such as those party pictures from last Saturday night in Facebook, you can't guarantee just because you turn them off that the content is still gone.
He says digital ghosts of photos or web pages can survive online for years, even after you delete them from your machine. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
We all know how bad things have been on Wall Street, but they're singing the blues way uptown as well. Sagging fortunes in New York City's financial district are contributing to a slump in one of America's most legendary black communities, a community that only recently got on its feet. Kate Ellis of American Radio Works reports.
So what can I show you today, my dear, as you're rushing about?
Princess Jenkins woos a customer browsing her collection of designer clothes. She's run this shop, the Brownstone, for 11 years. Lately, foot traffic to her store is slower than usual, and it's never been easy convincing people who live in Harlem to shop in Harlem.
Most people who lived in Harlem over the past 30 years are used to leaving their community to go to shop because guess what? There was nothing here. So you're breaking molds when you ask people, hey, stay in a community where you live to shop because they haven't been shopping here.
With the recession mowing down businesses, the Greater Harlem Chamber of Commerce is running a Shop Local campaign. But it might not be enough. The chamber predicts that by the end of June, one-third of Harlem's small businesses will go under. That could be a crushing blow to a community whose prosperity is already fragile. Over the past decade, the strong economy and Wall Street boom were a big boost for Harlem. Higher tax revenues and new investment flowed into a community that has long battled poverty and blight. Abandoned housing got renovated and new stores opened up. Jenny Schutz is an urban policy expert at New York University.
We particularly worry about these neighborhoods in transition because it takes a long economic expansion for them to get on the upswing, and things just start looking good, and then the recession hits.
Dr. Leon Merrick is familiar with that. He's had a solid dental practice here for nearly 20 years. Nowadays, his patients, when they come, often bring a daily dose of bad news.
They'll come into the office, and they'll look fine until they sit in the chair, and then the gleam in the eye and the twinkle in the voice is no longer there. And then they'll say, I lost my job. And they're just sad. They're sad.
Merrick says it's like a syndrome. And with the economy still struggling, he says, there's no telling how long that syndrome will last. In Harlem, this is Kate Ellis for Marketplace.
For more coverage of how the recession is shaping the economy, keep browsing marketplace.org and click on Big Shift. Starting tomorrow, the U.S. Treasury is selling a weekly record $104 billion in 2-, 5-, and 7-year notes. That's to help finance some massive spending programs. And while treasuries in general are feeling the bite of a recession, long-term bonds are downright tanking. Ironic, because Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan says long-term treasuries used to be the only asset that produced a decent return. He's joining us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
So explain these bonds and why are they so important to us?
The 10-year bond is especially important because fixed-rate mortgages are based on the 10-year bond. So the higher it is, the higher mortgage rates are. The lower it is, the lower mortgage rates are, and presumably the better it is for house prices. And the Fed is running around trying to keep it down. The 30-year rate matters for a whole lot of insurance companies, and also if you're like me and an optimist. You know, when you retire, you might want to have income for the rest of your life.
But what causes these rates to go up and down?
Well, it depends. If you believe what you read and hear, it's investors' view of inflation, which I think is generally nonsense. I think what causes it to go up and down is what causes everything in a market to go up and down, which is supply and demand and various trading strategies.
So given all this information that we have, I mean, why are these long-term treasury bonds just tanking right now? I mean, it wasn't doing this last year.
Well, one of the reasons they're tanking is they did so well last year. If you owned a 0-10-year treasury, it went up 23% last year. The 30-year went up 45% this year, and that's because rates went down. Rates went down because people were panicking and running into treasuries. Now that there are green shoots and people are starting to actually look at the numbers coming out of the federal budget, now suddenly a lot of the emergency money and now some of the regular money is leaving. So the 10-year zero, the last time I looked late last week, it was down 11% on the year, you know, which is down a lot.
So then you could say it's panic versus reality?
Well, yeah. Last year there was a panic and everybody wanted into these bonds. Now they want out. Or to use the terrible analogy, last year treasuries were the greatest thing since sliced bread. And this year so far they've been toast.
All right. Fortune Magazine's Alan Sloan joining us this morning. Alan, thank you.
You're quite welcome, Steve.
Hey, hope you can join us at our website, marketplace.org, where you can share your thoughts with our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.